Blog Talk Radio.
And we thank you for being with us here at Our Common Ground at blogtalkradio.com. OCG, I'm Janice Graham, and we are well and hope that you are well tonight. This is our special, which is a feature of Our Common Ground, and what we do here is we talk about the issues that matter, and we hope that we'll be hearing from you at 347-838-9852. That is our call-in number. We'll be taking calls later on in the program. Our guest tonight is Paul Porter. He is the founder and editor of Industry Ears, and Paul will be joining us. And we're going to be talking about a number of issues, and it all has to do with black voices in American media. The question tonight for us is whether or not the black voice has a place and a positioning in American media, and we're going to be looking at, with Paul, some of the issues around black talk radio, TV that is focused in the black market. We're going to be looking at print media and trying to decipher what are the problems that we absolutely need to begin to address. What do we need to really talk about in terms of where we're going? And what messages are positive, what messages are absolutely essential for us to be able to get out into our community, and how we're going to handle that, and what are the difficulties and the barriers. We're also going to be talking with Paul about H.R. 848. I am sure that you have heard much about that, and what we need to do in order to be able to control the messages that are in our community and the messages that come into our community, because it's absolutely essential that we begin to control what messages are dominated in our community.
We need to be able to absolutely, we need to be able to control the messages, the messengers, and be able to really have some capturing our own messages and our own piece of the media. We all can see how very important it is to try and get our messages across. We cannot develop any particular political largesse or political agenda without being able to control how it goes out and how it comes in. We hope that you will stay with us tonight to talk about these issues. The other is that, what is the future of whatever positioning that we are going to have in our community, in terms of media. I'm wondering what are some of the questions that you have? What are some of the thank you, I'm trying to get all this technical problems out of the way, but I'm wondering if any of you have some particular or particular issues that you want to talk about in terms of black presence and black voice in our media. And again, our call-in number, when we begin to take calls later on, you might want to jot this down. 347-838-9852 is our number here at Our Common Ground. So glad to see many of you. We've got Ms. India Declare of the India Declare Show that here at Block Talk Radio, Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m., Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. And we've got Stephen C. of Atlanta with us, Information Man. And thank you so much, Information Man, for a great, great presentation of some of the issues in our prisons. It is not easy to have. Is that better? It is not easy to work in the American or any prison system. And we also want to say to Yard Jockey, we're glad to have you with us tonight. Our guest tonight is Paul Porter. He is the editor and the founder of the Industry Ears, a consortium of entertainment and broadcast industry professionals. He has in his organization more than 60 years of experience dedicated to revealing truth and promoting justice in media, and we certainly will be pleased to get his take and his perspective. Not only our music, but I don't know how many of you realize that BET is one of the most watched cable stations in this country. Jackie is telling me that we are experiencing techno difficulties, and I think I'm going to have to undo something that I tried to do, and it's really not working out too well. I was trying to use my professional microphone and call myself on the show by using the click-through feature, and that wasn't going too well, and I just figured out what I must do in order to do that. I've got to mute my Our Common Ground. And we thank you so much for being with us. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest tonight, Paul Porter. After working at BET in the top three radio companies for over 20 years in New York and Washington, D.C., nobody is more qualified to tell the story of both black media in America than Paul Porter. For more than two decades, he has been a prominent voice in American radio and television, from ATT to Showtime. His baritone voice and on-camera talent has been recognized in over a half dozen top venues, while his personality has resonated on the airwaves of numerous radio stations and as the announcer for seven consecutive NBA All-Star shows. In 2000, 2003, after almost a decade of BET and other radio stations in D.C. and New York, including 3 years at WBLS-FM, he began work as an on-air personality at WRKS Kiss FM, an urban AC station. And the sister station of New York's number one hip-hop station, Hot 97 WQHT-FM. 2 years later, having been involved with the hip-hop music industry for almost all of his career, his focus took a very dramatic shift after an incident involving a controversial song by rapper Ra Digga, as the nation watched it play out on Fox's Hannity and Combs. On January 15, 2005, he co-founded Industry Ears, a think tank created to identify and correct injustices in the media. And we are so pleased to have him with us. We will take your calls later on in the show, and hope that you will tune your thinking caps to this very, very serious issue about American media, and especially the voices of Black America therein. Let's take a quick tour of what our guest Paul Potter has had to say about some of this, and on the other side, we'll bring him in.
Across the country?
It's been happening for a long time. I mean, the lyrics and the content, like, everybody talks about videos, but Black radio, or, I mean, CHR radio, white radio, playing the same thing that, you know, everybody's disturbed, but it's been happening for a while. It's just that most adults have turned away from it, but the kids are following the form, and they're running around, and they beat ITCH and everything else all the time.
Now, be honest. What was your reaction when you saw the Smack Fest and heard the lyrics to the Tsunami song, Michaela?
Sadness. I'm really heartbroken more than I think that everybody enters in different ways. And some folks are quite outraged, and it activates the activism in them. And I'm heartbroken. These are my folks. Those are my sisters. These are my people. Turning on each other and playing such a small part of a big game, and their win, what they take away from it, is so small in comparison to what they're giving away.
Mm. So, and they're giving away
dignity.
Okay, right. David E.
Well, I think we have to put it in its proper context. First, when you see promotions like Smack Fest.
It's affecting more than music. It's affecting a culture for kids that listen to hip hop radio all across the country, who just get drilled in the head with these same gangster stupidity songs, but they live it, they believe it, and they learn it. And see all this other BS that we're talking about, the politics of payola and the votes here, it's not about media reform. It's about media justice.
Across the country?
It's been happening for a long time. I mean, the lyrics and the content, like, everybody talks about videos, but Black radio, or, I mean, CHR radio, white radio, playing the same thing that, you know, everybody's disturbed, but it's been happening for a while. It's just that most adults have turned away from it, but the kids are following the form, and they're running around, and they beat ITCH and everything else all the time.
Thank you so much for being with us here, my brother, on our common ground. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Am I loud and clear?
Yes, you are very loud and clear.
Okay, I don't want
to
be too loud.
After having done terrestrial radio for so long, I get real shaky on this Blog Talk Radio thing.
It's okay, sounds good.
We're safe and we're sailing. Paul, let's talk first about your career. You were at BET, radio stations in New York, radio stations in Washington, D.C.
Hey, I started in your city, Boston.
Oh, did you?
1090 WILD Boston.
ILD went. You probably were there.
Sonny Joe
there
White
when
days.
I was there. Sonny Joe White. Brother. Remember Brother Blue? You remember Brother Blue, the children's entertainer, the black children's entertainer? You might not remember him, but I was told this morning that he passed yesterday. He was a children's entertainer and storyteller, and he told African stories.
Okay.
Let's talk about your career. How did you get into media? What drew you there, and what were some of the high moments and the low moments?
Well, here's the high. You know, I grew up in Queens in New York, and I got to hear, you know, radio in the old days and listen to WABC and WWRL, and, you know, when the DJs used to talk to you, and Gary Bird and just different folks that were entertaining and coming from New York when BLS first signed on the air. I used to listen to Frankie Crocker and, you know, went to school in Boston and, you know, Northeast and the College Station. Turned that around, WRBB. It was, you know, doing all rock and roll.
I did that for 2 years on Sunday Show.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, I did the college radio thing, and I just enjoyed what the music industry was doing for a long time because, you know, I grew up, it was just me and my mom, and music was an important part of me because my mom wasn't a big talker. And I used to find out stories from records. And, you know, in the old days, I remember being young and hearing Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, and, you know, the impact that song had on me and just different love songs and everything else. So music just played a big role in my life, and I, you know, followed up and got lucky, got a job in D.C. Donnie Simpson hired me, and then, you know, television came in with local video and a Gannett video show, a show in NBC. I was at the NBC O&O and did community affairs. And, you know, then Donnie went to BET. I followed him to BET. I got the program and see the music video industry, you know, this change everything, you know, from 1989 to 2001. It was just such a rapid rise where you saw one or two videos from Billie Jean finally getting on MTV to, you know, all the crazy stuff that you see today that really started hitting hard in, you know, the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm. And that really affected the other aspects, the other arms of media. It affected
Because of the money. They put so much money. Yeah. Yeah, people don't understand. There was a long time that radio ran the record industry when record companies used to come in and, you know, have an album or later a CD and, you know, the program director would say, man, I don't like this single. I don't like this. I'm going to play this. You would hear four cuts from a brand new album on the radio at one time. But that all ended with the advent of music video. And they were spending $500,000, $1 million on a video, and they wanted everybody to play the same thing across the country. And, you know, the stakes went up all of a sudden. You know, grease in the palm of one guy in, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina, they decided to grease everybody's palm at one time, and, you know, the country started playing things in unison around the country where records broke out regionally. You know, there would have been no Motown sound because, You know, certain records always happen in the South or the West Coast, or same thing for rock and roll, or, you know, the grunge started in Seattle, but now you'll see if you follow playlists or Billboard, you'll see 200 stations add the same song on the same day, and people wonder, why? Why does that happen? But, you know, that's a longer story than we can do on your show.
Yeah. Somewhere along the line, you were really big in New York, and Rod Digger came along, and rap was really digging in its time. And one of the reasons that I was following this at the time is because Two Live Crew had come after me because I was on the air protesting what I believe was the emergence of something very nasty and very ugly coming into black music. And you were at the time at Hot 97 WQHT, and when you protested the immorality of the music being played there, you were removed from the air.
Well, yeah, you know what? I got to be honest. We were all desensitized over the 90s, hearing these records and dancing along and really never felt the effects. And for a long time, I knew some of the things that we wouldn't play, you know, 5 years prior to that we were starting to play. And, you know, you challenge yourself, well, am I getting it right or are they getting it right? So it took a while, but I was just amazed at what I was hearing. And it was a 12-year-old little girl came up to me. I used to volunteer at a school out in Queens on 224th in my own neighborhood once a week and work with kids, you know, teaching them how to read and communication, how to be a broadcaster, basically. And a 12-year-old girl came up to me, Latia, with a note crying. And I was like, what's wrong? And she said, Mr. Paul, can you get this record off the radio? And I heard the song. It was the chorus of Rod Digger was, got to beat that bitch with the bat. Got to beat that bitch with the bat. And, you know, I remember talking about, damn, we are just losing our mind playing records like this 24 hours a day. Sometimes, you know, crazy records would get on late night mixes. I remember being in Boston in 78 when George Clinton in Parliament came out with We Need the Funk, and churches were calling Sonny Joe White complaining that funk sounded like the F word.
The
show you how things had changed. But anyway, Latia gave me this note, and I said, what's wrong? And she said, my father beat up my mother, and she's in the hospital. She was in critical. He tried to beat his wife to death with a bat. And, of course, kids were making fun of her every time the record came on because they knew what happened. So it was like I had an epiphany or something, and I said, okay, I'm going to try to get this record off. And, you know, went through the process of talking to my boss and the group leader in New York, and they basically told me, look, you got to make a decision. But luckily, you know, email was king then, and I emailed the CEO of the company. To my surprise, he answered back within 10 minutes and said, Jeff Smolian of Vemis, who I didn't know from Adam, and he said, no way we play records like that. Let him look into it. A couple of days later, he looked into it. That record was off the air, but there was a note in the studio, you know, telling jocks that they can't play curse records, and the note said, thank Paul Porter. So I said, oh, boy, here we go. And I started to debate with Funkmaster Flex and, you know, the jocks at the station, and some understood. Yeah, man, I don't know if we, you know, nobody wanted to stand up. Everybody was, you know, and understandably interested in their checks more than content. And that's how the industry up until this day is about checks and not content, or checking what images are being played. And industry years when it got formed, it wasn't about, you know, it was more about getting some balance back into things. And I understand there's all different types of stories to tell, but when, you know, all the current stories of misogyny and violence and drug this F this and bleep this. You know, there is no such thing as freedom of speech, because if it's coming out of urban radio, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be something negative.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, you really begin to turn your wares and your...
Well, I had no choice. I was blackballed. You know, they, mm-hmm. you know, 4 days later, they took me off the air. I never worked again. Believe me, I wanted to work. I was making good money over the years, you know, being a broadcaster. But, you know, I wound up becoming a story of the New York Post, doing Hannity and Combs, and, you know, Paul Porter couldn't find a job. So it was no easy road to, you know, make mm-hmm. this switch. I was, you know, but it also started the passion, you know, being flat broke and losing everything over something that you knew that was right, you know, I just had a different drive. And it's hard to get people to speak about the establishment these days because times are so tough. And the same job, you know, same job I started at WKYS in D.C. in 1982, making $66,000. 27 years later, Kathy Hughes owns it, and the same jock is making in my same position $28,000. So, mm-hmm. you know, you figure that out.
Yep, yep. I do remember around the same time when I was on the air as a talk show host, sandwiched in between 20 hours of music and rap and hip-hop were just taking off, I was getting flack from program manager and the DJs because I was kind of ringing the bell and saying, hey, we need to really look at what's happening here and doing it almost on a daily basis. Tell us about Industry Ears.
Well, me and my partner, Lisa Fager Bediaco, she worked in the music industry. You know, for years, we kept talking and seeing how the industry was just free-falling and, you know, the lack of artist development and bands. And, you know, I always say the same when I go out and do lectures or speeches or panels. Or we went from lyricist to the lyrically challenged where, you know, it was sort of obvious anything could become a hit, you know. It just the repetition, this drilling it in the people's heads, and we started forming this idea, and I came up with the name Industry Ears. I held off, and, you know, it was a tough time, and Lisa really helped me a lot. She was sort of the meat and potatoes. If you go to industryears.com or .org, you can see there's a lot of research, a lot of information, and it took us a while to put it together. We got our nonprofit status, and we still haven't been funded 1 cent by anybody. But, you know, but this is how we speak our mind. But one day we'll write a grant and get some money and do our own research. But luckily we've done enough things that we get to partner with other organizations, larger organizations, and sort of, you know, get to speak our mind.
Mm-hmm. Now, Black Radio really has been the conduit in which across this nation, Black communities have built achievement, have built coalition. It really had been the center.
Yeah, but Black Radio died a long time ago, Janice. It's not that place where you get information or news. Local news ended. You know, Black syndication is, you know, if you're a Black adult, you're 35 times more likely to hear syndication than a white adult. And there's a reason why, you know, across the country you only hear Tom Joyner and Steve Harvey and Michael Bazden. And, you know, you limit the voices, you limit the messengers, and, you know, everybody celebrates it, but we really don't understand that. It creates a disconnect where stations are licensed, you know, they're public stations that you get a license granted to serve local communities. And syndicated programming really does not do that because they don't talk on local issues. I mean, there could be a tornado in your area, but you won't hear it, you know, on the time to join the morning show unless they take a break and go to the local board op in the studio. But that's just what's been stuffed down our throats.
So how do we then in today's hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. How do we begin to reach out to media to again be a source of both our communityism and our political power?
Well, first, you got to learn and find out what the rules are, you know, and taking action it's got to be, you know, in some steps. I mean, there's, look, as people of color, and at least I'm just going by my experience, we do more talking around the water cooler or during the football game or men in the barbershop. But when it comes to organizing and you know, educating and fighting for something, I often call the civil rights movement the worst thing for Black America ever, because for some reason we thought we arrived, and since then we've been splitting directions instead of building on things. So I like to tell folks that first they got to learn the issues and try to start finding out more than, oh, the radio sucks, or I just don't listen anymore, or I got an iPod. And remember, you can own these places and take them back and hold them accountable for what they're doing and, you know, what they're feeding to the next generation of children out there.
Let's talk about some of the rules. We know that you've been a very outspoken person who has really laid out for consumers, because, you know, we are media, people are media consumers. Talk about who makes the money. Who develops the program?
Well, there's something out now called the Performance Rights Act. You know, I testified in front of Congress. I've been learning how to play the political game on Capitol Hill. And, for example, the Performance Rights Act is something that's going to pay royalties to musicians and singers for work that is played on the radio. So big business, corporate America, and broadcasters don't want to pay a royalty. And for some reason, everybody else across the...
You're referring, of course, to H.R. 848.
Yeah, H.R. It's called the Performance Rights Act, H.R. 848.
Yeah.
And, you know, broadcasters don't want to pay a royalty to probably the only real expense that they don't have any. How many businesses can you own where 85% of your programming comes for free? They pay songwriters. A lot of people are confused. The songwriters get it, but get a royalty, but the artists and the performers, you know, if Dionne Warwick sings a song, she's been sort of out front on this, she doesn't get a royalty from that. But in other countries, the only countries in the free world that don't pay royalties are the United States, North Korea, Iran, and China. So we're tied in with the axis of evil. And the fight from the broadcasters, the fight from the broadcasters are that, you know, it's going to kill them if they have to pay this royalty. But, well, like I said earlier, they never came to you to see if you wanted syndication or if, you know, if you wanted to cut out your news department, if you didn't want them to do any community affairs. But, you know, it's a different time that they're going to go under. But, you know, it's been a long time. Once these stations started, went public instead of local, you know, stations are geared to stockholders and not to listeners.
Mm-hmm. Now, you wrote a letter to Kathy Hughes, who is the founder and chair of the board of Radio One. And one of the things that you said in that letter was the old attitude that people of color don't want or need information has now been proven false. The digital age has brought millions online searching for news, talk, and information. I applaud you for that message to Ms. Hughes. I've been listening to her reality radio podcast and wondering what planet she went to develop her perspective about her, the consumers that listen to her products. In your estimation, who is controlling what we have traditionally seen as our black media outlets? Because
well,
we know that it was
Janet,
there that we, yeah.
Let's get it right. There are no black media outlets. There's some black people on TV. There's some black people on the radio. But beside Kathy Hughes, who's, you know, financed by somebody else, we really don't own anything or call any shots when it comes. I've got to go to all the top shows in the country. I mean, and, you know, last week I was out at Entertainment Tonight. I've done a lot of press for the Anna Nicole Smith thing. And there are no people of color anywhere making decisions. So, you know, it's great to call it Black Entertainment Television, but that
mm-hmm.
was sold a long time ago, and that's just a part of Viacom. So, you know, like I said, I had a joke. I was on with Bev Smith at the Congressional Black Caucus. I said, what are the chances of Paul Porter starting a network or even a station and calling it Jewish Entertainment Television? It would never happen. They would shut it down so fast that it'd be over. But, you know, folks of color can, yeah, I mean, if they played Amos and Andy 24 hours a day, we'd talk about it, but there are very few people that take action.
Mm-hmm. So where do people like me, people like you, people who are interested in the news, I mean, people who are interested in trying to use media in a way that is empowering rather than simply neutral in all things?
Well, I mean, there's different strokes for different folks. I always tell folks, you got to create your own media. Then there's other people mm-hmm. that want to fight and learn about it, and I tell them to sign up an industry years for the newsletter. I tell them to call me. I tell them to email me, and I've hooked up with people and got what I call soldiers all across the country that are, you know, doing battle, you know, instead of nuclear warfare, I say it's hand-to-hand combat. And it's a lot slower, and we might be losing the battle, but we're still fighting, you know, and learning the politics. You know, we did a study a couple of years ago called the Rap on Rap. Yeah, and that study made the advertisers aware where they were putting their dollars, and we said it's unacceptable. And it worked. Procter & Gamble pulled off of certain shows on BET, GM, and some of these larger companies, because on one end, they have their, you know, community affairs section, like Procter & Gamble. They have My Black is Beautiful, but if they're, you know, supporting a network that's playing a video show that's playing Rump Shaker and Stick It Up Her Ass on a video, then, you know, that's contradictory. I don't want to spend my dollars with you. And you know, that's where I think we make a lot of, you know, impact, is affecting people's bottom line, and that's the almighty dollar.
Well, I'm certainly encouraging our listeners to go to industryears.com and to really look at, you have a beginner's guide to media reform. I think that that is the kind of information that we need in our community to begin to understand how we've been duped, for number one.
Well, first of all, here's what I forget. We've been fragmented so much. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
here it is. You know, you have an adult station, which they call Urban AC Station now, in your market, and the young kids have the urban station that's geared to them, where the DJs are named Big Money Mike and all that stuff, and they play all the crazy music. But you're listening to Kiss FM and you're still listening to the OJs and Sade and everything, but your kids are wild and are, you know, listening to songs and waiting until you see my dick, and they're playing on the radio. So, first of all, I always tell a lot of parents, spend some time and find out what your kids are listening to. And if that doesn't get you fired up, then you're not really ready. Or watch some music videos and see what's really happening. And don't use the excuse, I'm not going to watch it anymore, because the generation that's growing up that's going to rob you at the store or sodomize your daughter, they're getting that information every day.
I do think that in our community we seem to have given up on the notion. It's almost as though we have bought into the idea that music is, that the music we hear on the radio, that the music our children listen to, is indecent and obscene, and there's nothing you can do about it. That black people have given up on the idea that they listen to radio stations, they pay for satellite radio, and they get a news that's so distorted, so partisan in its politics, and so distant from the kinds of issues that we face as a community, and they just tend to say, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. Paul, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to start taking some calls.
Okay.
For those of you who would like to talk to Paul Porter, who is the co-founder and editor of Industry Ears, our number is 347-838-9852. You're listening to Our Common Ground, and this is the Our Common Ground special at Blog Talk Radio. We do it now and then. We're glad to have you with us here tonight, and on the other side of this break, we'll take your calls with Paul Porter, our guest tonight.
I'm feeling that I don't hear anymore.
So much more exhilarating to hear a song on the radio than to play it yourself at home.
One word that can stop someone from killing themselves, someone from giving up.
If you got the right voices and the right things being said on the radio, you can change the way people walk down the street.
I don't remember anything else but black talk radio. Being like that.
Hot 97 in every city, 107 point wherever in every city, power whoever you are in whatever city.
And just like the Panther Party, they got rid of, they're getting rid of black people.
If we can't communicate with one another, then we don't know what's happening.
When we lose the power of our own voices, we lose complexity.
Also, you lose the sense of being able to respond.
Out of the thousands of radio stations in this country, only a handful are black owned.
So we have a problem here. The media doesn't look like America.
It all comes down to policy.
So I think we have a legacy of discrimination. And what have we done about it since? Not a lot.
This is not a new era. This has been a total removal. And if somebody didn't plan it, then I don't know how it happened.
It's affecting more than music. It's affecting a culture for kids that listen to hip-hop radio all across the country, who just get drilled in the head with these same gangster stupidity songs. But they live it, they believe it, and they learn it. And see all this other BS that we're talking about, the politics of payola and the votes here. It's not about media reform. It's about media justice.
Across the country?
It's been happening for a long time. I mean, the lyrics and the content, like everybody talks about videos, but black radio, or, I mean, CHR radio, white radio, playing the same thing that, you know, everybody's disturbed, but it's been happening for a while. It's just that most adults have turned away from it, but the kids are following for them, and they're running around, and they be ITCHing and everything else all the time.
We'll be right back. And we thank you for being here at Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham. And with me tonight is our guest, Paul Porter, who is the editor and one of the founders of Industry Ears. We welcome your calls at 347-838-9852. We're really looking for where we are. Where is the black voice? Where we need to be able to start looking at how we change. Paul, thanks again for being with us here at Our Common Ground. I want to ask you about your recent appearance on Entertainment Tonight. You were talking about a new song that has been, I don't know, songs issued now, a song that's been performed by Rihanna.
Yeah, Russian Roulette.
Russian Roulette. We've got that clip of you talking about that particular piece that she, her newest piece that has come out, the first since the big and very public issue of her being an intimate partner violence victim. Let's listen to this, and I want to get some more comment from you.
The controversy surrounding Rihanna's new album, Rated R, in stores November 23rd. Russian Roulette is the racy new single stirring the pot due to dark lyrics some say promote suicide.
Take the gun and count to three.
I sat down with Paul Porter, co-founder of the nonprofit IndustryEars.com, a think tank dedicated to promoting justice in media. He wants record companies and radio stations to be more accountable for the material they release.
It's kind of surprising listening to her speak about this subject.
I just think the people greenlighting these things have to do a better job.
Suicide is a problem, though, out there.
We wouldn't have this discussion if Rihanna wasn't so big. She's just a bigger star, so that's why we're having this conversation.
And the spotlight on Rihanna is even more intense since she was physically assaulted by ex-boyfriend Chris Brown back in February. Rallying to Rihanna's side, artist Ne-Yo, who wrote and produced the disputed song, he said, quote, "Nobody's really going out to play Russian roulette or thinking about killing themselves or nothing like that. It was just an interesting topic over a crazy beat."
Paul, tell us more about your perspective on this. I know that you wrote a very, very intensive piece about what this means in terms of what our children are hearing, and whether or not we really understand how they respond to what they're hearing.
Well, the shame about this is I knew it was an opening because Rihanna has sold 15 million records, but there's tons of records on the radio right now that deal with, you know, negative subject matter, but it's a whole lot easier to get some attention when you have a larger artist like Rihanna. Even though Lil Wayne has been, you know, talking about cooking blocks of crack on the radio for over a year now, nobody's, you know, budging when it's Lil Wayne. But since Rihanna's been through this thing with Chris Brown right now, she's the new star. I watched her on 2020 last night, and she says she was shocked, and she knows what an impression what she does has on young girls across the country and the world. But at the same time, the record company and Rihanna and management and everybody else connected with this project has okayed a record that, you know, matter of fact, the senior vice president of Def Jam, November 2nd, a year ago, committed suicide and shot himself in the head in Atlanta. Young, bright brother Shakir Stewart. Let him rest in peace. So suicide is a problem. So Ne-Yo, you know, his comments are naive, but, you know, there should be somebody up there flagpole to say, hey, man, let's do something else. Or can we go in another direction? Or, you know, or it's got to be a parent or somebody else. But, you know, I'm really tired of, you know, some of the clips you were playing, those shows were 5 years ago, and I get to say the same thing a whole lot, but, you know, it's you know, and folks are waking up to it, which shocked me that Entertainment Tonight called and said, hey, let's do something. You know, it might have been short, but they were ready to do something. And when I went out to L.A., it was sort of powerful because some of the guys, you know, the director and the producer of the segment said, hey, I got a 16-year-old. What should I do? Everybody's having the same problems and the same issues with their kids. And some of these, you know, kids now are real dark and gloomy. If you go to, you know, some of these local high schools, the Rest in Peace, R.I.P., those are some of their favorite T-shirts, and it's just a whole different era now.
Well, you know, one of the things that Industry Ears does is it really seeks to provide sources of information so that individuals can participate aggressively and actively in creating change. And what I see is media disparities. Because you've got, on one hand, you've got, especially at the junior high school level, you've got Montana, whatever that woman's name, High School Musical kind of thing, which has really been created by Disney and other corporate media to handle suburban kids. And the junior high school kids in the inner city have to deal with Rihanna singing about suicide.
Yeah.
You know,
luckily
I'm
the record
in
has slowed down after all this news and press, so hopefully it'll come to a halt real soon, but that's another story. Yeah, but
why are you saying that? How is that going to happen?
Well, a lot of pressure's been put on Def Jam. You know, I check charts and numbers, and it's not doing too well. It's finding some resistance to... Hey, look, and the way that Industry Ears, we do a lot of our work, is people tell us what's going on. When that record broke, the same day it got leaked to radio, I had a program director from Chicago call me and New York. Mm-hmm. Two real big guys who said, man, this record is crazy, you know, and it's surprising. I'm starting to get calls from the same skeptics a couple of years ago said I was soft. Now people inside the business, and we call it Industry Ears because we get inside information and talk, and we fight the system from the inside out. But now cats in the industry with jobs are saying, look, this is going too far. I wouldn't play this record, but I got to play it. So, you know, I'm seeing some progress. I just don't know if my patience can hold on and keep knocking it out because, you know, the other thing, it takes money for nonprofits. You know, I met with Tim Winter, the president of Parents Television Council, and they're a big organization. They raise millions of dollars and have people across the country and, you know, studies that they can do, and they've been quite helpful. But, you know, Industry Ears, man, I got a cell phone and an iMac. So it gets a little harder, but, you know, but with effort, you can get the same story across and, you know, Entertainment Tonight seen in, you know, 60 countries around the world. I got an email from a buddy of mine who saw the piece in Australia. So, you know, we can get, you know, everybody has different ways, and there's plenty of organizations, and that's why I like to hear from people, and you can email me, paul@industryears.com. That's with the S. You can email me, and, you know, we can start a conversation and try to find out what you think your strength is. And there's organizations all around the country that would love your help, just like Industry Ears would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, one of the things that my audience has been particularly hit with lately is that, you know, we had a network, an internet radio broadcast network. It wasn't doing well. It shut down, and I know that you've known Lee Michaels for many 20 years.
20 years. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're trying to build a talk radio network that specifically addresses hard-hitting issues. I mean, I've had on this show many of the people who you will find on your major cable news and networks talking about hardcore issues, about health care reform, about prison reform, about political corruption and what our government needs to be doing, working toward an agenda for this president to handle. And you can't get people to support what they say they want, Paul.
Yeah, well, but here's the other joke about that. The folks that you see on cable television, there was a poll during the Obama campaign where they asked, you know, black folks, who would they like to see speak for them? And it was a poll with, like, you know, the top 70 names. And no offense to Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, but they got, like, 6 and 4%. So, you know, but they're the favorites of networks. If there's a situation, they're going to call Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson. So there are folks that want to represent black folks and talk to black folks, but it's, you know, right now the models are all screwed up. So right now the model is Syndication One, Kathy Hughes Talk Network. And, you know, that has Al Sharpton on, and they're saying black folks aren't listening to talk. Well, they've put the same voices on, you know, with the sports show on in the afternoon from 4 to 7. So that,
yeah, where everybody else is talking about the hot news cycles and
sports
at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah, so don't tell me nobody's really tried it and done it right. I still don't think it's been done right or done enough, and whoever makes that first move that proves that black folks can do more than dance and sing and play sports, you know, be that powerful voice. And I got a better chance to be Jesse Lee Peterson or Larry Elder. If I wanted to make some money, man, I could go right wing and
now,
you'd
be
down
on that end. Yeah. You can't believe how many times I've said that. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and our number is 347-838-9852. We welcome your call. Paul, we're going to go to a caller who's calling from area code 248. Good evening and welcome to Our Common Ground. Thank you for joining us. What is your name and where are you calling from, please?
Hi, Janice. How are you? This is Navazora. I'm calling in because
welcome.
Steins,
I respect you.
Steins has a question from the chat room, and she wanted to ask the gentleman, and we appreciate him being on the call. What does he think about Tyler Perry?
What does Paul Porter think about
Tyler Perry? Well, it's funny. We were talking about Tyler Perry and me and a couple of friends. And, you know, I know Tyler Perry's built a big empire, but Tyler Perry's against unions. Tyler Perry's against paying people. And Tyler Perry found his success wearing a dress. So, you know, and don't get me wrong, I saw him at the CBC. I celebrate the brother, but it's always, you know, how come you got to make it wearing a dress? And, you know, and yes, he's a multimillionaire, going to be billionaire maybe, but and he's done some good things lately with the movies, but, you know, if I got to wear a dress to make it and that's going to be my leading character, Madea, I'm not feeling that right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and I think Spike Nav And Steins, who you're calling on behalf of, I'm not even going to get into that tonight. But Paul, I think that you have hit in an area where Spike Lee, while he wasn't as critical in his expression as he could have been, because I don't think that he did the full analysis. And some weeks back, we had Dr. Mark Neil Anthony from Duke University, who has written a wonderful piece about the pros and cons of Tyler Perry products. And I tried to get through them. I swear I did. Saw one thing and I couldn't watch anymore. I saw one good thing, and then a thing Mark had challenged me to watch some Tyler Perry stuff. But I think that we do have to be critical in our thinking and in our acceptance of certain kinds of characters. What's your take on it, Nav, on the Tyler Perry characters?
well, I have mixed feelings about it. I basically don't like to criticize anyone, because the way that I'm looking at it is that Tyler Perry is employing a lot of our people, you know, regardless of their age, size, and a lot of the industry, they're turning a back toward those type of people. And I think he's setting a fine example as that. Now, as far as his topics goes, as to the type of movies he's making, I mean, there are several other movies out there and television shows that are on that he's doing, and they're very good, and I basically don't have a problem with that. So, I mean, I think what he's doing is really good, and it's helping our community, and we need more people to do that.
We need more black men wearing dresses. You're right.
No, I'm not. That's not what I'm saying.
I'm only kidding.
That
was a joke. That was.
But Paul did make a, point to some of your comments, and one is that he's hiring a lot of people, but he's also doing a lot of union busting. He's hiring a lot of people, but he's not.
Yeah, Bob Johnson hired a lot of people at Black Entertainment Television for 20 years. And luckily, I wasn't one of those people for 10 years. I was a contract employee who didn't have to be there. But believe me, they were all broke. You know, it's great to get experience, but it's great to get paid in that experience. And somebody like Oprah, I had a friend who left, Robin Beeman, who left BET to work for Oprah as PR, and she got paid, and Oprah pays her people. So, you know, and I'm hoping Tyler Perry decides to pay his people, too. Because, you know, McDonald's hires our people and everywhere else. It's great to have a job, but it's great to be in television and get paid like you're in television. So, you know, sharing the wealth, man, that's the toughest thing.
You can't,
if I may say, he is working hand in hand with Oprah right now, and as far as I'm concerned,
on the movie
Oprah. Yeah, well, not only that, on other projects they're going to be working on as well. And Oprah sets a fine example as for standards, and not to change the subject, but going back to what you said about union, I've been involved in unions for years, and the union, I've been an outstanding employee and individual person. And the union has done nothing for me, and I've always had to pay into the union. And today, my job is union, and they cut me 25% of my pay, and I have to produce even more. So when it comes to the union, I don't really care for the union.
Yeah, well, after and SAG, all the, you know, theater and television union, and, you know, luckily I'm vested in that, and that's how Paul Porter eats, because there's a retirement. When I was in a union and I got fired at NBC, I got a check for $145,000. And when I left from working with Kathy Hughes and increasing the billing from $400,000 to $8 million a year, I got 2 weeks' pay. So, you know, and I know there's good unions and bad unions, but, you know, being a employee at will is also pretty painful for folks that don't have benefits across the country. And that's what a lot of these media jobs, you know, and television now, you get no benefits, no retirement, and when you're not getting paid too well, it's really rough. But, yeah, you know, I understand your plight with your union, but there are some good unions out there, especially in theater and film. You know, when I was in L.A. last Monday at CBS Paramount, everybody in that place is union, and they're all living well.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the issues, and I've had this issue with Radio 1 and even BOL and some of the small radio stations, because I started out in a small community radio station that was a regional broadcast unit, and people can't bank grateful. You know, and I think that many black businesses fail to understand that they have an obligation to their employees in the same way they have an obligation to get rich or their goal. I mean, it's almost like there's a resistance that somehow they feel, black businesses feel, that they don't have the same responsibilities as a non-black business in terms
well,
of
see,
how
they get
pay,
beat
what
too.
Benefits.
They get hurt on commercial ad dollars, you know, and this money vested in, and that black folks, you know, really get beat when it comes to a lot of their small businesses, and you get to always pull out of the minority pot. So I understand that you could be number one rated in Arbitron and be a black state radio station and be number 10 in billing. So,
yes.
You know, there's different fights out here, and there's plenty of them and plenty of knowledge when you understand the industry, but... Yeah,
and those are the issues of media equity and justice in this country, and how media that services a black consumer, the black and brown consumer, is treated differently by the larger corporations that have to feed into those businesses. Now, do you have an additional question? For Paul Porter?
No, that's basically it, and I'd like to thank him so much for being on the call, and thank you for listening to me, and thank you so much for having me on.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from one of the largest union states, as far as I know, in the world, and I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan. And we're going down, not up.
All right.
Paul, you ever work in Detroit?
No. I got friends that work at JLB. And
My girl
Karen Dumas is there. She's still on the radio on, what is that station, 107 PM. Anyway, she does a talk show there. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, Nav, we're always good to have you with us
when we're
on the air. And thank you for your participation, both in the broadcast and in the Our Common Ground chat room. For those of you who have just joined us, our guest tonight at Our Common Ground is Paul Porter of Industry Ears, and we've been talking about a number of key issues in our media, in American media. Paul, let me ask you a question. Why is it that Kathy Hughes can have reality radio to run her campaign against H.R. 848. Why is it that the Black Caucus doesn't have theirs?
Well, first of all, because people have wanted to buy opposing viewpoints on Radio 1 in this bad economic time, but they won't allow it. You can't pay for an ad to say the other side.
Yep.
So that's the power of the media when... You 2.5 minutes of reality radio every hour, mm-hmm. preaching this stuff to their audiences without opposing viewpoints. So
yeah.
That's pretty scary.
We've got three calls on our line, and we're going to go to 916. 916, I respect you. Thank you for joining us with Paul Porter. Where are you calling from, and what is your name, please?
Graham, this is Information Man from California.
Information Man from California. Good evening, sir. Thank you for joining us. What's your comment or question?
To Mr. Paul Porter, much respect to you, sir. I just missed the statement about the Tyler Perry issue, and I just wanted to add that I totally agree with your perspective about how we always have to see black men, or black men have to always put themselves dressed up as women to achieve something, to be accepted, to make it in Hollywood. And I believe that a lot of what he's doing is similar to the minstrel shows, and I really believe that if Tyler Perry was a Caucasian or white director, a lot of us in the black community would be raising a lot of problems with that portrayal that he portrays with his movies. And I think we give him a pass sometimes because he comes from a Christian perspective. I mean, if he puts Christian perspectives in the movie, then we say, well, it's a positive thing. But we forget the history of minstrel shows and the way they portrayed us in throughout history of cinema in this country. And I wanted to know, what was your opinion on that? I know you did touch on it earlier.
Well, I'm right with you on that, man. It's always like we got to step backwards to move forwards. And look, black folks, we are the official pass givers. You know, we might let the brother off that murdered the 13 women in Cleveland and raped them. I really don't understand why we are so easy. And, you know, I've talked to, and it's really amazing to me with this Tyler Perry thing, because I've met so many sisters that just love it. And the brothers, a lot of black men right away go, hold on, man, is this Flip Wilson, you know, 2005, or what is this dress? Is it Martin? Is it, you know, how do we keep, you know, playing this role and being celebrated? But, you know, more power to them, man. Everybody's got to make their dollar.
Yeah.
But like I said, I speak freely, and I don't appreciate it, and you know, another dumb show on television or a comedy. And like the previous sister said, that, you know, some of the later movies are getting real good, and, you know, are some powerful things, and I'm glad for that.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, sir,
hey, Information Man, thank you for your comment.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful.
All right, thanks.
Thank you for your honesty. We're going to go to 561. It's Florida. I know that one really well.
Hey, Janice, this is House Music Lover.
Good evening, Hotep. Assalamu alaikum, my brother, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for
Paul
having
Porter
me.
Paul Porter is our guest tonight.
How you doing, Mr. Porter?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm fine. I want to ask you a couple of questions. At first, to make a quick comment about that Rihanna song. I've heard about it, but I haven't heard it. And when I do get a chance here, I'm going to be listening to hear if she's actually promoting suicide, or if she brings it up just as a subject, and she's not glorifying it. There are a lot of controversial subjects that's been brought up in music over the years. That's one of the great things about music. My biggest concern is how it's presented and if it's promoted. What was it, Mary J. Blige and Ludacris had a song about a girl being abused a couple of years ago that was a really big hit. That was probably one of the better songs I liked from Ludacris. It dealt with a negative subject matter, but it was done in a positive way. So that's what I'll be curious to hear about Rihanna.
Well, and I'll let you go on, but it's real, real hard for me to find a song that's talking about Russian roulette that's geared to an audience of, you know, 10 to 15
mm-hmm.
year olds that can digest it and pull something positive out of pulling the trigger. So
I'll give you that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I understand.
Yeah.
And I had a question, if you knew of, and I just thought of this off the top of my head, when Sirius and XM Radio, when Talk, there were some mumblings about either Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton coming in and negotiating channel as part of the deal. That didn't happen?
No, that didn't happen. Believe me, I was all over that one, and you know, that was the real powerful thing, that they were going to have to add some more content. Look, even the folks that are on Sirius and XM now, a lot of mm-hmm. them are doing free shows where the other talk shows are being paid for it. So,
right.
You know, that it happens everywhere. We get jerked.
We do get jerked. If I can ask one quick question, what's your opinion about H.R. 848? And if it goes through, do you think that it's going to bring quality to the possibility of black talk radio, because people are saying that they're going to play less new music, or it will even have an effect on the music to make the music
get better? Here's what Kathy Hughes told my man Warren Valentine. She says if it passes, they're going to get rid of the Talk Network because the Talk Network's not making any money. So, I believe the opposite. That probably means there'll be more talk or more information. But let's get it right, too, that if it does pass, it doesn't even take effect for 3 years. So the whole market will change. And believe me, any of these broadcasters, they're just going to charge back the record companies and make them pay for more. Right now, the marriage between radio and records is so blatant in terms of money and dollars. It's, you know, none of these stations are going away. They'll just find another way not to pay somebody or rip somebody off.
Yeah, and the way it's set up now, it's just the corruption, and then it's just all the payola, and it's hard to get. It's one person programming 30 different stations nationwide. You hear the same songs and for 3 months and whatever. It's just horrible anyway. So
yeah, it's bad, and that's why I said I'd rather see them crash and burn, and you know, get sold off in fire sales, and maybe some folks will take. It's about time that urban radio, gets a new format. We've been hearing the same things and saying the same slogans and Kiss FM and Power 99, and we've been hearing the same tune now for the last 25 years.
That's true. I agree. I'm ready for something different, that's for sure. Yeah. All right, thanks a lot, Mr. Porter. Pleasure talking to you. Thanks a lot, Janice.
All right.
Thank you, Alan, so much down there in West Palm Beach, Florida. We're going to go to another call. 281, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for joining us. What is your name?
Good evening.
Where are you calling from?
Hi, Janice. It's India DeClaire. Hello, Mr.
Ms.
Porter.
India DeClaire of the India DeClaire Show. Thank you for joining us, India.
Look, thank you so much, Mr. Porter. Finally, okay, the format of radio is so tired. It is tantalizingly tired. You actually covered issues that I was going to ask you about regarding the 848. My question is, what will it take? And you actually addressed this, the crash and burn scenario. What can we do to eradicate, to bust up the fossilized model that no matter where you travel to, no matter what you turn on, it's the same tired, irresponsible crap. The Rihanna thing is so disturbing to a point where, it is written by ill people, marketed by ill people, and sold to ill people. There's no other way to explain that. What will radio look like in the next 10, 15 years? What do we have to do to break this tired, monotonous, obviously irresponsible, quote-unquote, entertainment? What do we have to do?
Well,
who do we need to talk to?
Guess what? The kids have it right, because radio makes no difference for these young kids. When we were younger, radio was an important factor, but radio's already lost the next generation. That, you know, with iPods and everybody's creating their own music and making their own radio stations. And until that happens, until folks leave and really leave, people talk and act like they're not tuning in, but there's still folks tuning in and passing it on, and that's going to create some change. Otherwise, we can protest and do all this stuff, but if the dollars are still rolling in, and they've been getting worse over the years. Look, the record industry's been down 8 consecutive years in a row. So they're not producing the music that anybody wants to hear. And then you see a guy like Maxwell go out, who now is the biggest R&B star in the past, you know, 10 years with his concert receipts. So it's proven, and I love Maxwell, but he's not exactly the greatest R&B singer of all time, but it's showing that there's a need that folks want to see entertainment and performing and a real band out there. So, you know, until we own something or build our own network, maybe Tyler Perry will do it.
Okay. Well, so I guess we're just gonna hold on to the crash and burn scenario. Yes, ma'am. Yes, Miss Janice.
There is one thing that's not part of this equation, and it just hit my brain as you were talking, is that we haven't asked Tyler Perry to do it. We haven't asked Oprah to have two channels instead of one channel on XM, where we really can have some localized targeted news and information. I mean, you look at where are the reporters out of our community. The reporters, so-called reporters, are contract people who are writing pieces for Essence Magazine, who are writing pieces for Ebony, who are writing pieces for Jet. Ebony and Jet have a radio station on the internet, but nobody knows anything about it. And we're not asking these people. We're not Maxwell. Okay, we're saying to them, let's compromise here. You do your thing, but you do these things as well.
But Janice, I don't think that's true. I think people have been, you know, asked for years, man, and everybody, you know, goes for themselves. It's like Russell Simmons was supposed to create his own distribution for the recording industry. He winds up selling Def Jam, you know.
Green.
Bob Johnson had a chance.
Yeah.
He sold it. They offer these crazy dollars to these folks once they get in these positions to sell out, and 99 out of 100 times people take that dollar. You know, they sell that corner store in my old neighborhood, which used to be black-owned, that hasn't seen a black owner at the bodega now for 20 years. So, you know, it's finding that right person that has that right voice. One day I was on the train talking to Bill Cosby. I was on the Accela train from Philly to New York, and who walks on? Bill Cosby. And we were talking, this about a year and a half ago, about all these subjects. I gave him my card. We talked about it. He was impressed. I'm in Bill Cosby's new book. Well, he mentions industry ears in there, but I never heard from him. So you're right. Maybe getting to one of these people would help, but, you know, it's gonna have to be something more grassroots. Maybe I can wear a dress and do a talk show on Blog Talk Radio, and it'll become popular. And then when I get a lot of money, then I can turn it into a real talk show.
In this era of unprecedented, historic instability, you would think our people would be thirsty for more information. If we do not establish a vessel or vessels, plural, in the era of Obama, and on top of it, all of this uncertainty, political, economic, military uncertainty, shame on us. I could care less about some music artist, with all due respect, I want to know what's going on in our communities, and I want to hear people in our communities voice their issues and their concerns. And it seems like everybody wants to bullshit boom and shake booty, and I'm like, hello, the world is on fire. Can we put the music down for a minute? It's time for information.
Yeah, I wish that was the case of the masses, but look, here's what we're losing out to, because people think they get their information when they turn on CNN and they hear Don Lemon tell the same story that everybody else does, and that's where network television and news does a good job. You know, they do Black in America special in the lowest rated month of the year, July, and everybody tunes in.
It's just so tired. It's so tired.
Yeah,
but thank you so very much, Mr. Porter.
All righty.
Thank you,
India, for joining us tonight. That is India Declare of the India Declare Show. And for those of you who don't know, she is on Blog Talk Radio from Monday through Saturday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and she is on Blog Talk Radio Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., and you should join her at the India Declare Show. Paul Porter, we're dealing with a $10 billion a year hip-hop industry that claims to reflect, as you report in Industry Ears, Black life and culture, and 80% of it is consumed by whites. We're dealing with African-American teens ages 12 to 17 to listen to more than 18 hours of radio per week on average, as compared to 13.5% for all teens. And I think what IndyClaire is asking is, how do we harness that to our benefit? And that is really the dilemma here. It is the dilemma of how as consumers both of media and both of products in this country, we begin to find a place for our voice in this public square. Because if Barack Obama tomorrow decided he wanted to hear the voices of Black people, where the hell would he go?
Well, look, everybody has their own approach. And some people think we have to create new forms of media. But personally, I believe in taking over the larger forms of media, to take back that radio station that's on 100,000 watts and not on 2,000 watts that goes off at nighttime. So to me, there's no excuse. You know, when I got to Northeastern University, and Northeastern was, you know, this 1976. When I got there, it was all white, and the station was all white. And, you know, I found out what the system was there, that if you went to three meetings in a row, you became a voting member. And I took those Black folks that were in the quadrangle, you know, we all sat on the same steps and took them up there 3 weeks in a row. And they all became members until we outvoted the white students that were members, and they made me program director my freshman year, and I made the whole station Black, and it stayed Black for 25 years. So I know that seems different, but I believe in trying to take over the masses, you know, where I can reach the most people. Yeah, I'll do an interview with one person, I'll talk to one person, I'll talk to 20 people, but I won't be satisfied until, you know, there's some voice or some network on television or some real radio station with the real signal and a real market that can be a prime example to show that it can work somewhere. And I think it's eventually going to happen. There's going to be some owner, somebody that's going to give somebody a shot, and it'll be, if it's done right, it'll be done successful. Yeah, there's other ways to go about it and building your own radio stations and on the internet and all that, but I want to be able to reach, you know, a couple hundred thousand people at once, you know, or I want to be able to reach our kids and tell our kids what's going on, because they're being brainwashed. You know, we've already cut the next generation off.
I had a very interesting conversation with the mayor, newly elected, going into his fifth consecutive term as mayor of the city of Boston, who happens to be a neighbor. And I was talking to him about the power of radio this morning and why in the Boston Public Schools there is not in the major high schools a broadcast program for teens to participate in. And it's interesting that you bring that up because he has suggested that I talk more about him. I've been telling him I've been broadcasting out of my home for 9 months. And he said, yeah, I heard you were doing radio. I heard you on WKK, but I didn't know you were broadcasting out of your house right here. And I said, yeah. And you know what? The kids in Boston Public Schools could broadcast right out of their schools. You could set up a network where every high school would have their own radio station. And so I think it begins there some years back. And Paul, it's really interesting because I can identify people more by voice than I do many times by looking at their name. But you and I had a conversation many years ago. It was like 1985 when you were at Weill, about the importance of talk radio and trying to put together a talk radio formula for the in the city of Boston. I was working on a project with the Boston-wide WCA. When Marty Taylor was the executive director, I got her interested in looking at broadcast radio as one of the ways in which you can provide services to teens. But I really do appreciate you spending the time with us. I'm very excited about developing a relationship with Industry Ears. We do have to think through where the opportunities are in the future. And speaking of the future, what's the future for Industry Ears?
Hey, well, real quick, when you were talking about radio stations, there's a LPFM, what they call low power FM, that's in Boston.
Yeah,
it's been
successful. Started in Boston.
Yeah, and there's been some legislation, and that's a chance for people to be in markets with 100-watt stations and do what they want. There's a brother named Paul Billings who has the Beat 103.1037, the Beat is called. It's online, and it's in Michigan. He's rated it like number 4 in the market, and he does talk music, real information, real news on a low budget, and he's doing things. So there's, you know, and on Industry Ears, we talk about that, LPFM, and there's other ways to go about it. And the FCC is about to grant some new licenses and open up some frequencies for minorities in major markets. So that's something that people can afford to do. And in the meantime, Industry Ears, we're just going to keep trying to get the word out as much as we can on subjects of interest. And I hope to hear from people. You know, the last thing you can do is get information and don't do anything with it.
Our guest is Paul Porter of Industry Ears, and you can reach him by writing to him at industryears@gmail.com.
Yep.
Or you can go to the Industry Ears with an S.com website.
Yeah,
and
you can find it there.
Newsletter.
The newsletter.
Yep.
You can see my email address there, Paul in Industry Ears. And you
well,
know.
Paul, it's been it's great to be able to have this conversation with you. You are certainly a resource on the issue of both American media and Black Voice, and helping us to understand.
Hey, so, Janice, if you see me with the dress on. I'm on TV. Just remember,
okay,
I sold out for money.
As long as you're on radio. As long as you're on radio, I'll talk to you. But if I see you coming down the street, it's a no-go, my brother.
All right.
Thank you so much, Paul Porter. And look to have you. Look forward to having you again at Our Common Ground. Thank you. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. We're going to take a break, and we'll continue to take your calls to talk about Black Voice and how important it is. Looking inside how Black urban youth might be either victimized or empowered by the role that media plays in our society. We also want to hear from you about music and the mind. Are our children's thoughts, is their worldview being molded by what they hear in music? And the whole question of how did Black news get killed? Paul Porter alluded to it a bit, but, you know, in 1973, 21 reporters from three Black-oriented radio stations provided African Americans in Washington, D.C., a daily diet of news. They were located WOLAM, WOKAM, and WHURFM. Hard factual information vital to the material and political fortunes of the Black community. And that was happening all over the country. And right now, we don't hear what we might call Black news. We want to hear from you. Our number is 347-838-9852 at Blog Talk Radio. This is Our Common Ground. We'll be right back on the other side.
Historically been a significant source of ideas and information in the Black community.
That's right.
And that has dramatically changed. We're the owners and managers of Black radio now, whether they be Black or white, have a different agenda, it seems, and are no longer committed to providing news, music, information, ideas that would resonate with their audience, but instead the stations are being programmed to be attractive to media buyers, not to the audience. And so it has created a very different kind of reality with broadcasting.
With Janice Graham.
See, there was never really a commit. The corporate interest was always there. There was never really a genuine interest in serving the community. There was a political climate in the street that put pressure on media, and then there was the FCC that had some requirements and some demands.
Listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and I'm your host, and we're asking about, in these last moments of last segment, the Black voice. Where does it find its place in the public square? Paul Porter was our guest earlier, and one of the things that I posed was, if Barack Obama really wanted to hear what was important to African-Americans country and what the African American agenda was, where would he listen? He certainly could turn to CNN. He could turn to MSNBC. He could turn to CNN. He couldn't turn to Fox. He certainly couldn't talk to ABC. If you think about it, and all of us, many of us, watch the Sunday news commentary shows, is our voice there? If you listen to your local radio, I had a very, very interesting experience the other day. I was in my office, and they pretty much cut me off on the server from listening to many of the talk radio shows that I listen to during the day, WVON in Chicago being one of them, and I can't get to it anymore because they blocked it. So I found another talk station, talk show in Atlanta, and I was listening during the course of the day when I wasn't listening to the India Declare show, waiting for her to come back on at 8 p.m., and I listened to one show coming out of an Atlanta radio station, and it was during the time that there was the shooting at Fort Hood, and I listened. I came home, got into my car, listening to XM radio on the left side of Sirius, and I still never got a story on Fort Hood. It was not until I got home some hours back that I learned of the Fort Hood incident. That is really, really, really interesting. We want to thank Nate for her call and Alan out of Florida. Nate called us from Detroit. And with us tonight, India Declare for her call and her comments. I think that India is right on point. I think that one thing I like about Paul Porter is that he really has his eye and on the of radio and TV industry. And he is very, very, I would say, honest about what this situation is for in terms of finding black voice. You know, the question is, where's the place devoted to providing a forum for African Americans? Where do you go? Where do you get information and opportunities to form and bring your opinion to the political discourse and policy decision makers? Do you write to some of the print media? Do you rely on the internet? I mean, it's really interesting. Even if you go very good, pretty much neutral but comprehensive site like Huffington Post, if you go to Crooks and Lies, if you go to if you go to Counterpunch, if you go to The Beast, The Daily Beast, if you go to Slate, if you go to all of those places, are you finding, is that where the black voice is? Is that a black voice for public discourse? You know, the other question I have for you, and our number is 3478 9852, and in the 10 minutes or so that we 15 minutes that we have, what do you find, how would you define empowering an activist voice? Our number, 347-838-9852, and is there a correlation between where the black voice is and our political cattle. If we have nowhere in which to express, I mean, we all know, let's be real here. We all know that if you call what is probably considered the national shows, you don't get a lot of information. What you get is a lot of people calling in with opinions. Well, one of the reasons that I enjoy listening to talk radio is because I enjoy hearing different perspectives from my own. One of the reasons that I like to do talk radio is I enjoy hearing perspectives that are different from my own, perspectives that are informed by a different kind of information. But where do we get the information? I mean, you can go to many, many sources right now, Headline News, CNN, you can go to NBC, ABC, and you can get information that is general, but where do you get relevant, empowering, and activist information about your community? That really is the question. Our number, 347-838-9852. And for all of you who would like to, please join us at the Our Common Ground after party. It will be at talkshow.com. And you might want to write this down. The call ID is 68056. And we will be gathering for the after party at talkshoe.com at 11:15, right following this broadcast. So those are the questions, and I think they're just absolute interesting questions. Where do we stand? What are the impediments? Are they corporate? Are they because we don't have the will? Or is it because we don't know that it is important? Where is either of the priority about our place, our voice, in media? Information man in his call, one of the things that he touched on was the whole idea of how relevant and to a certain extent how destructive certain images in media can be and how defeating they can be. So 347-838-9852 is a place for you to be able to voice your concerns. Let me give you some statistics, and I went over some of these earlier, but over 90% of radio stations, record labels, magazines, TV stations, and retailers that disseminate hip-hop and games are white-owned. One of the things that Paul Porter told us, that we don't have any black-owned media. Because own means you have to be able to control as well. That's what it means. And right now, we don't have any. You know, we've got 19, we've got teens in our community, 12 to 17, who listen to more than 18 hours of radio per week on average, as compared to 13.5 hours. And we don't control anything about what they're listening to. Nothing. Nada. What does that say about both our priorities, and what does it say about the so-called political capital that we have gained. Tonight at talkshoe.com, we're going to continue to talk about empowering and activist voices in print, TV, and radio, but we're also going to talk about the nonsense that has been going on in the chamber of the House of Representatives today. The president met with the leadership, the Democratic leadership. I don't know where they were when I came on the air. They were wearing me out because not one person at all that they were interested in really getting paid. And what does that say? That says we are a loss as a country. We are just as Indy DeClaire is saying in our common ground, we are an ill folk lusting for and after utter ignorance and self-denigration. You're absolutely right. And the thing is that the people who would be, we cannot find them. Imagine for a minute, we are a people who have, we are the mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles of a $10 billion a year hip-hop industry. Shame on us. They claim to reflect black life and culture. Don Lemon on CNN, when anytime any black stuff is talked on CNN, they give it to the black boys, black men. We have people like, as Paul Porter pointed out, Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson, he's making money. He's one of the few that's making money. And we have to rely on the goodwill of some people who might come by a website and might donate some money. What the hell is that all about? We hope that you will join us at talkshoe.com. We hope that you have not gotten about Maltrece Richardson. You can go to criminaljustice.change.org to get more information. She is still missing. Her father is on a huge campaign. I have agreed with her father to do a broadcast with him so that you will know more about that situation. She's the young woman who has been missing now for more than a month in California. And if we were getting the news, we might not be missing so many people for so long. One of the things, too, is I'm hoping that people will come to talkshoe.com to the after information about young, the situation where the serial killer has been killing people in his neighborhood. People have been asking the police to investigate what was going on there. It's hard to tell the story in the way it's being reported because it's very, very sketchy. It is very, very dramatic as opposed to factual. We want to thank Stephen Charles and India Claire, Don from Oklahoma and House Music Lover, Information Man, your call, O. Henry, we're glad to have you with us, and Stein, I was out with O. Henry until about 2:30 this morning with Alpha, and Chicago Stepper, for always being one of our really loyal fans. We thank you so much. Nan, thank you so much again for your call. Steins, you did a great job last night. I was trying to find my aluminum bat, but I could only find my wooden bat today. So we all get together. And, you know, it's really interesting that a house music lover found a friend of mine last night, did a search, and he had recently passed. I was very, very saddened by that. Let us kind of review what these issues have been, and thank you so much for, again, for being with us, and thanks to Paul Porter of Industry Ears. It's industryears.com, and you can write to him at industryears@gmail.com. You can also find us at Our Common Ground at ourcommonground-talk. .ning.com. That is where we put together all of our information. We hope that this was helpful for you in thinking through the Black Voice, and that we will see you again. You should check on our Ning site, ourcommonground-talk.ning.com, to get, you should sign up. You can get our and you can do a number of things. We have provided snippets of the information. There is an interview with my friend and longtime colleague Bob Law on the site that we have uploaded. Thank you so much for being with us, and we will see you as we listen for you at Our Common Ground. Thank you so very much for being with us.
It is a kind of collusion where the broadcasters, whether they be print or electronic, they wind up saying among themselves, none of us will do anything. And I had a conversation like that, television network actually said to us, I didn't do anything when the heat was on. There's no heat on now. What makes you think I'm going to do anything now? But it was the heat that was on that created the what it was that people applauded about the media. It was never the media that had a sense
of their own volition,
of some sense of commitment, but there was pressure coming from the street. The pressure is not there. When I said it used to be an heavy, all of those things that the FCC required broadcasters to do no longer exist, so they don't do it.
Find the power, 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 find the power that be.
You're listening to Our Common Ground with Janice Graham.
This is the Nighthawk Show, rocking your radio on the sounds of soul.
At a radio station, in a time of change.
She's always been a station.
In the 1960s, there was a radio station DJ in Washington, D.C. named Petey Green, an ex-con who talked his way onto the airwaves and wasn't afraid to tell it like it is.
As Paul Robeson pointed out, you might have to just stand by yourself. You know, you've got to stand for something.
Common Ground with Janice Graham.
Historically been a significant source of ideas and information in the Black community.
That's right.
And that has dramatically changed, where the owners and managers of Black radio now, whether they be Black or white, have a different agenda, it seems, and are no longer committed to providing news, music, information, ideas that that would resonate with their audience, but instead the stations are being programmed to be attractive to media buyers, not to the audience. And so it has created a very different kind of reality with broadcasting.